Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us. It's been a couple of weeks since we have done a show, so I'm happy to be back behind the mic for this particular program. The intrigue for me in trying to do all the stuff that is new this year, including Golf News Net Radio, is trying to figure out the right time to do things, and in particular, the right time to do this show. For years and years, I used to do it early in the week, like Mondays and Tuesdays, and that would set up the rest of the week in golf. And the way that things work now with Golf News Net Radio, I have a show that I do. It's about 20, 25 minutes each day. Very PGA Tour focused, called Two Off the First. And that's a five-day-a-week show. It's a weekday show. And then there's the press, which is kind of golf betting. And that's 3 days a week. And that's about 15, 20 minutes as well. And that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so trying to figure out what we have on the station, what stuff I'm doing, and when best to do things so that we have a good programming mixture for GNN Radio led me to believe that, hey, Fridays are probably the best day to do this show. It's more in-depth. It's not tethered to the PGA Tour schedule or headlines. I mean, we talk about that stuff, but it's not tethered to it at all. And it just kind of makes sense that it's something that we can air on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, still be relevant, and then come back on the station on Fridays with a new show, new weekly episode for the 19th Hole Golf Show. So that's going to be my cadence moving forward. I hope that works okay for you, and you'll be able to listen to it and enjoy it. Always love the feedback that you can send to me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Ryan Ballingy for both those things, if you want to follow me there. And finally, if you listened to the last episode, we kind of talked about a bunch of different things, but one of the things talked about was getting into sewing, and talking about making head covers and different things. So I came up with a name for it. Came up with Pins and Needles, which I think it came to me in the shower. Please don't imagine that. And just kind of gasped myself like, yes, that's it. That's the one you're going with. I've been thinking about it for weeks and it finally came to me. So we're going with Pins and Needles Golf. I'm going to buy the domain actually not too long after we record this, get everything set up, get that moving. And then with what's happening with Golf News Net, the website. If you are kind of a fan of fantasy golf or golf betting or just kind of researching data and history of golf, we're going to really ramp up what we're doing in terms of data presentation, data availability about PGA Tour players and their performance, career trajectories, comparing tournaments, comparing players. We're going to have almost all of that will be free and available on golfnewsnet.com. So I'm really excited about that. We've started creating player profiles that are very in-depth. We will have kind of comparisons between historical natures of tournaments. And then we're going to be able to compare players directly, current form, recent past, all that good stuff. A lot of data visualization, which I'm excited about. Very, very excited about. So there's lots to look at golfnewsnet.com that's coming up. But I spent the better part of the week, I flew down on Monday night to the PGA show in Orlando, and I coach my son's basketball team. He's 10, so it's U10 basketball at CYO for you Catholics out there. And I'm the assistant coach on the team. I head coach soccer, but not basketball, even though basketball was by far my better sport. And I wanted to make sure that I was there for their practice on Monday and home for their practice on Thursday. Simultaneously, my wife's birthday was Thursday. Happy birthday to Katie. And I wanted to make sure I was home on Thursday so we could celebrate her birthday, because I got to be honest with you, there's nothing that could keep me in Orlando over my wife's birthday and being able to celebrate with her. So wanted to come home for that, but wanted to make what amounts to like a 54-hour sprint through Orlando and do the PGA show. And if you've never been, or you're semi-curious, if you've never been, what the PGA show is, it is golf prom in a way, and I think it's even more so now. Last year was extremely sad. As someone who's been to the show for, I'm going to say the better part of 15 years, I know I haven't been to all of them, but for the better part of 15 years. And there were just frankly weren't many people there. A lot of the big names, the big manufacturers pulled out, and most of them said either to me or just publicly that they weren't willing to ask their employees, and almost all of them were remote, to come into the office. If they weren't asking them to come into the office, how can they ask them to gather in a very large million square foot space that was almost guaranteed to be a super spreader event and come attend this trade show. So they just backed out by the dozen. And the folks that were there were, it almost kind of went back to the older days of the PGA show. They were there to write business. They were there to meet people, potential customers, not just to kind of be there for show and puff your chest out, but to do actual business. And from that perspective, the show was lovely last year because I got to spend time with people, quality time with people that either I knew or were getting to know. And that was really enjoyable. It was just a little bit different, but the attendance was way down. And so for a trade show whose tagline is the major of golf business, you go, this was quite a minor. And this year, it felt closer to what it was pre-pandemic because they didn't have a show in 21. They had a show in 20, and that was really as COVID just started to be on anyone's radar in China and then started to come over to the West Coast and started to come over to New York City, and then the world changed not too long after that show. But in 2020, 2019, the 23 show was probably closer to those, but not exactly the same. For the most part, I think a lot of the exhibitors came back, not all of them by any stretch. I mean, some of them didn't come back. TaylorMade is one that's kind of waffled about the show for years, and they're not there, at least on the show floor. And the attendance, I think, is probably about 85 to 90% of what it was pre-pandemic. And I think that's probably a good thing. That's probably about as well as it's going to be received moving forward. But for me, and I think everyone in media is a little bit different about this. Some people go to the show and they produce articles and content just to try to find new things that are interesting and share it with their readers and all of those good things. And I do some of that on social media. But for me, the show has kind of become a social occasion. It is a kind of promenade of sorts. And I get to see friends, old, new, people I would otherwise not see anywhere else or very rarely see elsewhere. And they're all in one place. And that makes me really happy. That's really the only reason I still do it. And you get some opportunities to figure out the business side of things, whether that's advertising or partnerships or some combination thereof, just some networking, getting to know people a little bit, and hopefully forming relationships that last a long time. Because there are a lot of good people in this sport. There are a lot of good people in this game. And a lot of them work professionally in this game. So I enjoyed that a whole lot. I will say, though, that in most years, there really aren't things that I see at the show floor that blow you away. And this year, that actually changed a little bit. There are some things out there that maybe I've seen it, maybe I haven't, but they were different. And one of those things is Sportsbox AI. My friend Stephanie Way and G.A. Lee, and we've had them on various GNN programming over the years, particularly since they started Sportsbox. But they're revolutionizing coaching and how we learn about biomechanics and how us as golfers work with instructors or ourselves to learn about our bodies and the best way to move our bodies to be efficient in golf. And they're doing it with phones and iPads. And it's amazing what they have accomplished in the last couple of years. So for them to get more exposure through the show has been a good thing. And I promise you, in the next 4 or 5 years, they are going to blow up in a tremendous way. They already have, but it's going to be even more ridiculous what they're going to be able to accomplish. From a consumer standpoint, I saw something I never thought I would see, or just kind of wrote, and I wrote about this concept and actually saw, was reminded of it today, that you might be able to read greens with augmented reality glasses. And I wrote this article like 6 years ago and speculated about the future of it because of what the time was like, Google Glasses or Google Lens or whatever it was called. And that project didn't work out. But the hardware and the software, the firmware piece of it, have really come together in the last handful of years. And now something like that is possible. And I know it's possible because I wore what are called PuttView AR glasses at the PGA show. And I got to tell you, I've never had my mind blown by something golf related. I mean, golf clubs are golf clubs. They might do incredible things. They might take down spin. They might add distance. And the stuff that goes into those things is very remarkable and interesting to me. But you kind of have a frame of reference for those things. You know what your last driver did. You know what Persimmons did back in the day if you're old enough. You know what the first version of the Pro V1 is like down to, I don't know how many we've done now, whether 20 years into it, like the 11th version of the Pro V1, all that stuff. You kind of have a frame of reference for that. So each thing seems incremental. It's not like, oh my God, that went 50 yards longer. We don't have that anymore. Not that we ever did, but we definitely don't now. But the PuttView AR goggles, multiple times, and I try to be very professional with these things, multiple times had me on the borderline of freaking out about how wild it is. So to try to put a visualization into words, if you've ever used VR goggles, an Oculus Quest kind of thing, my son has got one for Christmas from his grandparents. So I've been using that on occasion just for giggles. And that takes you into a totally different world, right? That it broadcasts to a screen, a different world you immerse yourself in. Augmented reality isn't like that. You see the world around you with stuff overlaid on top of it. And so what they've done here is they use Microsoft HoloLens technology, which is the hardware component of this, and the firmware component of it. And then they have onboard LiDAR, which is kind of a scanning technology that you can use to map topography and all kinds of other things, but topography in this case. And in real time, it will read topography, and then based on where you know you're putting from, where you know your ball is, it will read the putt for you in a second, and it'll tell you the exact line that you hit the putt. It can tell you a range within kind of a curve of lines that work together, depending on how hard you want to hit it. It can give you that. It can give you the line based on how far your tendency is to hit it past the hole. Maybe you like to hit it a foot past. Maybe you like to hit it 3 feet past. What the line looks like there. You can adjust it based on green speed. And you can do all of that by just moving your hands around, moving your eyes around, pressing your fingers into air to go through these buttons that are projected onto the AR. It scans your eyes so it knows where you're looking and knows where your fingers are going to go. It's incredible. Just absolutely incredible stuff. And as I was saying to the person helping me with PuttView, I finally saw all the lines I imagined in my head when I putt. And that was really crazy. I'm very much a visualization person about putting. I'd love to see in my mind where the starting point is, what the curve's going to look like. I draw the line over before it happens and then try to putt to that. I didn't have to do that because it was there. And it was really easy to trust because that's the way I've putted forever. So it made putting so much simpler. You didn't have to worry about pushing or pulling it, doubting your line. All you had to do was just get the putter through with the right speed control. And you were in business. And it was incredible. So I have a video coming to me of me doing it because you can cast it to a mobile device and then you can watch it on a phone or a TV or have it recorded and have it sent to you. So that's coming to me, I think, after the PGA show. I will share it. It is absolutely nuts. Now, of course, the price is also nuts because it's new technology. It's $15,000. I mean, that's basically looking in the territory of a really nice Foresight Sports launch monitor or even a TrackMan kind of thing. And that price is bound to come down over time, right? As more people buy it, if you're a first adopter, you get the early edition. That's how the tech cycle works. And you'll get PGA Tour players and LPGA Tour players and DP World Tour players who will buy it. Coaches will buy it. Those are going to be the early customers, just eccentric rich people with $15,000 lying around. And if you're one of those people, please buy it and tell me what it's like. But then the price is going to come down because now you will have established a market for it. You'll establish what the hardware costs. All that's the great thing about technology is it is a depreciating kind of industry. Technology starts expensive and gets cheaper, and then more technology comes along and replaces the expensive stuff. So I would imagine within 3 or 4 years, this kind of thing is going to be, maybe it's $5,000, might even be as low as $2,000, depending on how many people get into it what the addressable market is, all of that good stuff. But that's the first thing I've ever seen at a PGA show where I was like, holy smoke, this is unreal. Because it is unreal, but that this technology has finally come along and is here. And it's from a company who make green reading books for a reason, because they were looking to take that data and turn it into this. And as they said to me, the hardware just wasn't there yet. Once it was, we were ready to go. So I hope it continues to flourish and grow. That's the one thing I saw that I will probably never forget. And if I had $15,000 lying around that I could just blow on AR goggles for putting that you can't even use when you play golf because that would be cheating, I'd still do it because it's that much fun. I could do that all day. Anywhere, anytime. You can use it indoors or outdoors. This isn't even a commercial for it. I just think it's that freaking cool that I needed to tell you about that. So that was the one thing. And I always get asked this, like, oh, what's one or two things that you saw today that were really interesting? That's it. I mean, that is 1, 1A, 1B, 2 through 10. It's all of it. There's a lot of cool stuff in the world. I will give a shout out to True Links Wear. They've come out with some really cool apparel that is going to match their ethos around the shoes that they've made. They've got 7 new shoe models this year. Shout out to my boys at Swannies. I meet with Adam Iverson is at Swannies every year that they've been at the PGA show and I've been at the PGA show, which I believe is like 6 years now. And we first met when I think it was four Swannies boys came in. They didn't have a booth. They were just walking around the show. They RV'd down, I believe, and they had a prototype, not even an actual production, a prototype of a golf sandal that you could wear playing golf. And I just really, I don't know what it was. I really respected the hustle and that they were willing to do something different. And if there's anything I can do to help you out, and likewise, let's stay in touch. And 6 years, I think it's 6 years later, Swannies has become huge and they do so much great stuff. The apparel is fantastic. It's comfortable. They're in so many more green grass shops. They do really well online. Their hoodies are to die for. Adam and I don't think we're the same people, but we have a lot of the same thoughts. And here's just one example. So I came over to meet with him just toward the end of the day. I had the PGA show on Wednesday. And he and his team were all kind of catching up. And he's grown from, 4 guys who came down in an RV to like 25 people who are staying in a mansion over in Reunion, which is a resort just outside of Orlando proper. They're having a great time. And they had 120 meetings over one day of the show. I don't know what they did on Thursday or Friday, but still a tremendous amount of business. And I came over, we chatted for a little while, and I saw what they had on the racks for next year. And I don't ask for those types of things in advance. I mean, they've got life to live and work to do. And I saw a corduroy quarter zip. And it's a hoodie, quarter zip, almost kind of like one of those Oakley windbreakers back in the day, and kind of that style, but in corduroy. And I swear to you, for the last several months, I have been searching when I get a random moment on Google for corduroy quarter zips that would be appropriate for golf. And he did it. And that's one of those things you're like, all right, we might be too much on the same wavelength. But that conversation that we have every year, and we've made a little bit of a tradition of it, is one of my favorite things. It's just one of those affirming things that's really, I think, important for anyone to have. But because we have this kind of random common bond, it just makes it all the more special, because it really brings a smile to my face to see what they've accomplished and what they've been able to do with an idea. 4 dudes walking around the show looking like they had illegal merchandise going around, and now they've become a tremendously large brand, and that really makes me happy, and that it can be done, that you can come in and be an outsider with an idea that's a little bit different, and with perseverance, some luck, even though I don't believe in luck, but perseverance, the right breaks, being on the right side of variance, you can do some incredible things. And so that to me is one of my favorite 15, 20 minutes of the year. Really is, truly is. And it happens only because of the PGA Show. So as I get older, the more I think of, oh man, I don't need to come down here. I don't need to do this. Why do I do this? And then I think I've got it to the point now after this year, this is what I want to do with it, which is go see friends old and new, do it one day, make a great sprint, smile all day, be happy about it, and then go home and hopefully make some new relationships, work on some existing ones, and go from there. And so many people, so great to see beyond those couple of things I've talked about that, yeah, it was worth it. So if you ever hear me take a dump on the PGA Show, rewind this conversation and play it back to me, because there is a whole lot of value in the people side of it, and that means a lot to me. So I wanted to get into the whole Rory McIlroy, Patrick Reed thing, and I wanted to do it not from the perspective of LIV versus the PGA Tour or anything like that, but really from the perspective of person-to-person relationships. So obviously I'm at the PGA Show when this happens. I believe it was Wednesday, maybe it was Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. And I guess Rory McIlroy was on the range at Emirates Golf Club. They're having the Dubai Desert Classic in Dubai, in the UAE. And he's getting ready to warm up or do something. I don't know what he's doing. I couldn't tell from the context of the video that I saw. But Patrick Reed walks over and tries to say hi to Rory McIlroy. And Harry Diamond, who's McIlroy's caddy, seems to kind of acknowledge him at least. But McIlroy's kind of in a crouch, it looks like, and doesn't really look up at him. And frankly, doesn't acknowledge him. And then Reed more or less just kind of walks away, probably embarrassed to a degree, and kind of flicks a tee, and I think it's a tee, not sure, in McIlroy's general direction and just kind of walks away. And that's really it. And I don't know if that's a slight. I don't know if that was intentional. It wasn't like he was flicking the tee to poke his eye out, Reed was, or anything like that. But in the grand scheme of things, without any context, that kind of thing would be fairly benign. And it kind of got blown out of proportion. Thank God I wasn't around to deal with that. But I have spent some time thinking about it, and thinking about it without the context of the LIV stuff and PGA Tour player relations. And I got to tell you, I think Rory McIlroy was in the right here. And I'm totally fine with the way he reacted. And I am totally fine with him, with people say, oh, he looks kind of bad, but he doesn't. And I want to explain why I think that way. I don't want to get into the petty nature of it. I want to get into just what it's like person to person here. So the reality is, Patrick Reed's lawyer is Larry Clayman. And Larry Clayman is suing pretty much everybody under the sun. He is suing different members of the media, demanding apologies for what they have either voiced opinions about Patrick Reed, or shared news reports about him, or shared different pieces of information about him that probably are embarrassing and probably do hurt his reputation, because he has hurt his own reputation. And he is also suing. He's created a class action lawsuit against multiple different golf bodies, including the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, Golf Channel, the OWGR, a lot of lawsuits going on there. It really doesn't matter what the lawsuits are or who they're against. But the lawsuits are there, and in those suits, the players based on the PGA Tour are involved, and they are named as principals. And one of those principals is Rory McIlroy. He's obviously a member of the PAC, the advisory board, for the PGA Tour on the player side. Very vocal voice. He's pretty well involved in the DP World Tour, as much as a guy who doesn't play full-time over there can be, because of his involvement with the Ryder Cup as well. So he has kind of stepped up as a voice. Well, that makes him a person of interest for Larry Klayman, who is very litigious and frankly frivolously so. And so he has sought to subpoena a variety of players, a variety of officials in golf. And he has attempted to do so at very annoying times. For example, he subpoenaed Justin Thomas, I believe, 2 days before or after his wedding. Now, that's pretty awful timing and probably intentional. He subpoenaed Rory McIlroy at his home on Christmas Eve, I believe, on December 24th, if I remember that right. So, McIlroy's not dumb. He knows that Patrick Reed directly isn't doing this, but that this is Patrick Reed's attorney, and that more or less, this is happening on Patrick Reed's behalf. Maybe not directly, but indirectly, because he's a LIV player. And so, when that interaction happened, or happens, whatever, at Emirates Golf Club on the range, if I'm in Rory McIlroy's position, I don't want to even acknowledge that Patrick Reed is alive. Your guy subpoenaed me on Christmas Eve. What a horrible way to have to spend December 24. And Reed knows that. Reed can't be that stupid. He can't be that lacking of awareness. He just can't. When you have an attorney who's suing people, you don't typically go up to the people who could be deposed or subpoenaed as a result and try to make good. That just doesn't happen. And that's not protocol. And I know we don't sue each other all the time, but I would imagine if I were in that position, I would not walk up to a person I needed to subpoena or depose and go, "Hey, I hope everything's going great. Great to see you. Hope all's well. How's the family?" Because I would expect to get slugged in the face, or at a minimum, the middle finger thrown at me a lot. Or, as McIlroy did, I think probably with more restraint than I would have, just didn't acknowledge him, just ignored him. And I think Reed has the self-awareness to know that. So I think Reed did it hoping for the best, hoping that one of two things would happen, that he would get into a physical altercation or some kind of verbal altercation with McIlroy and make McIlroy look like he's kind of petty, or with the hopes of that, or that McIlroy, being the class act guy that he is, would put that aside for 5 seconds, shake his hand, acknowledge him, while all the cameras are clearly going to be on that moment, and then Reed gets the rub of being a guy who's chummy with the guy that he subpoenaed through his attorney, or his attorney subpoenaed in a related lawsuit. So either outcome, Reed probably thought, I can't lose. It doesn't matter. Either way, it's going to generate headlines. He's going to look bad, or I'm going to look good, or both. And I think he miscalculated. And I understand that there's really not a whole lot going on there that you can see, and I don't think it's nearly as dramatic as it seems, or at least was made out to be on golf Twitter or social media or by aggregation sites that really wanted to chase clicks about this topic matter. And I think McIlroy was in the right. If he didn't want to acknowledge the guy whose lawyer looked to subpoena him on Christmas Eve at his home with his family, yeah, I would have not said a darn thing to that guy either, because it wouldn't have been good. It wouldn't have been worth it. It wouldn't have been beneficial. Why do that to myself? Okay? That makes sense. And I understand that Reed, being a fairly calculating guy, I think, probably knew that was going to happen. And that's why he kind of did the playful T-flick thing, because he knew that was an absolute possibility. And so he didn't want to leave it as just kind of quietly being ignored. He wanted to make a little bit of a scene, but not too much of a scene. And so he did that with the hopes of generating this kind of thing and maybe trying to make McIlroy look bad. But I don't think you can do that in this case. McIlroy can do other things that probably make himself look bad, and you can argue that sometimes he looks particularly petty. I don't think that he does. But I think you can make that argument. But I think it just kind of comes down to this whole thing is about how you deal with people that you don't like and that you don't have to like. And it has been pointed out several different times from what I've seen the last few days, that McIlroy has defended Patrick Reed in public in multiple instances related to rules things or personality type. He has not been gung-ho about Patrick Reed, but he also hasn't been negative on him. I would say I'm slightly above neutral in terms of positive public comments about Patrick Reed. So there's really no benefit to, you know, either party doing things like this. And it's sad that that's the case. And McIlroy, being a smart guy, probably knew, even if he were to be a semi-chummy with it, which I would not be, but he knew how that could look if it were particularly bad. So he held back. I think that's the right thing. But I think this is all about how you treat other people. And it's about, and I don't deal with it on this level, right? With in front of cameras, with the world watching, with a high stakes lawsuit or series of them in place, dealing with a existential crisis of professional golf. Absolutely not. But I think we all deal with people in walks of life who do this kind of thing, the kind of thing that Reed does, who act like jerks and then try to play it off as everything's fine, and who don't have the self-awareness to understand that what they've done, or are just so cocky that they're willing to look bad because they think they can make other people look bad. They think they can score points even when they're down. And that, to me, this whole thing to me is an example of that. And I don't think McIlroy looks worse. I think he looks just fine the way that he handled it. And frankly, he did it a whole lot better than I probably would have done it. And we move on. And I think it's another example of kind of the childishness, the pettiness that's happening with Liv. There have been kind of reports out there of Liv guys spreading their team logo tees all over, like Johnny Appleseeds at driving ranges of professional events that aren't Liv. They work very hard to try to create this reality that, you know, they're on the come and everything's great and all that stuff. And I don't understand it. I don't get why. And I'm never going to get why that is. And we keep coming back to this race. That's what the money's for. And if you signed with Liv, and hey, that's your choice in life. I'm vehemently opposed to that. We don't have to rehash that. But if you make a choice in life that's controversial, then you need to be able to live with the consequences of that, frankly, knowing that you got paid off to deal with those. And those consequences for some players, not all Liv players, by the way, are being potentially a pariah or made fun of when you whine. And that's what happened to Patrick Reed. I don't think anyone, by comparison, think about Cam Smith and think about Dustin Johnson. I think people are disappointed in those guys, if you're anti-Liv, that they went and made that choice. You can probably understand it because of the amount of money thrown at them, but you can understand it. But I don't think Dustin Johnson carries himself in golf public circles anywhere like Reed. He acknowledges that he took the money. He wanted the money. I think he's backing his decision, of course. You're kind of stuck in that regard. You can't just kind of come out and say, I've made a mistake, even if you think that. But he's kind of kept a low profile. He plays well in the live events, it seems. And he'll show up to the majors. And that's kind of going to be it. He doesn't really need to deal with the drama. Cam Smith acknowledged, hey, this is all about the money. I'm in a unique position as a new major champion. I cashed in. Hopefully it all kind of works out in the end. Pretty much everyone knows Cam Smith in golf to be a nice guy. He's a nice kid. So it's a lot easier to maybe put him to the side relative to the moaners and whiners of Liv who are wondering why everything changed for them, or why they think everything changed for them and their public perception, and because they took the money. And a lot of that type of stuff goes back to how your moves in life are perceived is by how you're perceived as a person. And if you have a history of being a jerk, if you have a history of being self-serving, if you have a history of being passive-aggressive and all those kind of negative traits that people hate feeling about other people, hate feeling treated that way, if that's your track record, then that's going to follow you, and that's going to be the prism through which your decisions are viewed, your moves are viewed. But if you're viewed as in a positive light, relatively harmless, hardworking, you know, whatever those virtuous things are, then those controversial things you do may get a little bit more understanding, or at least a little bit of a look the other way while you do them, for better or for worse. And I think that this is another very highly illustrative example of that. And we'll see a little bit more of that probably in the coming weeks when there's the arbitration hearing on the DP World Tour around LIV players who were sanctioned and that they were told they wouldn't be able to compete on the tour anymore back over in the summer in July ahead of the Open Championship with the co-sanctioned event, the Scottish Open, Genesis Scottish Open with the PGA Tour. Once all that's settled, and there's a reasonable chance it's not settled in the LIV player's favor, then there's going to be some moaning and whining. And we're going to come back to this cycle of people who did some things that weren't ideal and took the money anyway. And you're going to go, well, that's what the money's for. Deal with it. And meanwhile, you've got all kinds of stuff collapsing about LIV. We won't continue that too much longer. I want to get into something else. But that's, we're going to see this again. This example is just one. There's going to be more of them just like it. But anyway, McIlroy did things just fine in my view. Last thing I want to talk about is the Farmers Insurance Open. It's Friday when we're recording this. We're in the third round of the tournament. It's going to conclude on Saturday. So hopefully if you're listening, you didn't know that. Don't be surprised when you get here on Sunday and go, hey, wait, there's no golf one. And they've done this for the second year in a row where Farmers got with the PGA Tour, said, hey, we want to run this tournament Wednesday through Saturday. And I think there are two reasons behind it. One is a cynical reason. I'll give you the cynical reason. And that is that the AFC and NFC conference championship games are on Sunday. And frankly, nobody in this country that watches TV is watching anything other than that. The ratings that those games do are ridiculous and are going to be ridiculous because you have the four best teams in the league remaining in the two biggest games of the year that's not the Super Bowl. You're going to have 40 and 50 million people watching those games. That number of people are not going to be watching golf. They're not going to be anywhere near that. On a good year, good time, you might have had 3.5-4 million people watching the very end of the Farmers on a Sunday. Almost all of those people are not going to be paying attention to golf on Sunday in the same way they would on other weeks of the year. And I think this week is different than what we're going to have for the Phoenix Open for a couple of different reasons. One, it's a designated event, elevated event, whatever you want to call it. They call it designated event now. Designated event because you're going to have pretty much everybody who's anybody competing for a $20 million purse in an event that already generates tons of buzz and traffic. And, oh, by the way, on that Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday, but it's just one game, and it starts after 6 o'clock. So if you're a professional golf tournament, you can easily finish in Arizona before 6 o'clock. You can have everything done. It's a great appetizer instead of an also-ran. It doesn't work that way for the Farmers because those games are back-to-back, and they're usually like 2-6, 3-7. So you're right in the window when people start paying attention to football and not paying attention to anything else. So it makes sense to schedule program away from the NFL by finishing on Saturday. The non-cynical component of this is that Farmers Insurance is also a really big backer and sponsor of the Advocates PGA Tour. The Advocates PGA Tour, if you haven't heard of it, we've done programming with them, we've done content with them. They're great. And they've been around for, what, 16, 17 years, somewhere in that range. And it's a tour designed as a developmental tour to provide access to high-quality golf courses, high-quality tournaments, professional-grade stuff for groups of people that have been historically not welcome or underrepresented in golf. That's in particular the African-American community, but also the Latino community, and really anyone is welcome to play. It's not limited in any fashion to any kind of professional golfer, whatever your makeup, background, ethnicity is, but it was designed for that purpose. And that tour has grown tremendously in the last 3 or 4 years. Some of it has to do with diversity initiatives. Some of it has to do with just kind of a recognition by a number of sponsors, and Farmers is one of them. Worldwide Technology is another. African-American owned firm. And Lexus has gotten behind it. I mean, there are a bunch of them that have gotten behind the APGA. And it's a recognition that, hey, this is an investment worth making. This is something that could be transformative. Maybe not today, but in a few years from now. And they're starting to see the fruits of that. Willie Mack, who's one of the best players in the APGA, is now on the Korn Ferry Tour. Got through the Q School. He's on the Korn Ferry Tour. The support of the APGA helped make that possible. The opportunity of the APGA made that possible. And so for farmers, they can do two things at once here. And they can go, hey, we can get out of the NFL's way on Saturday and or on Sunday by finishing on Saturday. And we can also create an opportunity to spotlight the APGA on that Sunday using the same venue that we have access to for this Farmers Insurance Open. So concurrent with this tournament, for part of it at least, the back end, they have an APGA event going on. So that will be broadcast on Golf Channel on Sunday live. That's great. That's an opportunity for people to learn about the APGA, to see great players in action, and to see something different, but concurrent to a PGA Tour event. And they get it on a world-class venue, a highly recognizable venue. Yes, you can poo-poo the architecture all you want. That's up to you. But the opportunity to be on national television, be on broadcast television, cable television, I should say, is huge because the APGA really doesn't get that otherwise. So this is a chance that's made possible by farmers, their injection of capital and using their influence to make that happen. So I really like that. I wish some more tournaments ended on Saturdays for a variety of reasons, just to kind of have something different. I wish there were some tournaments that weren't the Korn Ferry Tour that started on the weekend and ended on weekdays. The way you set it up, you could have it in venues where you could have primetime golf, at least on the East Coast, and wrap up on a Monday or Tuesday as people are coming home from work on the West Coast. I think that would be fun. I think people could get behind it. The ratings wouldn't be as great, right? But you could get behind that for some tournaments. I think it would be particularly useful for tournaments like the 3M Open, or maybe probably not the Wyndham Championship because that decides who gets in the playoffs. Maybe you're looking at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, John Deere Classic. Why do they have to be played Thursday through Sunday? People aren't going to pay attention to them in the same fashion anyhow. Start them on Saturday and Sunday. Finish them in prime time on Monday and Tuesday in the heat of the summer. It's perfect. It really could work out very well. And as the DP World Tour has done with disabled golf events and adaptive golf events that they put on, you can run them semi-concurrently. You can have some overlap. So you get a little extra rub from the people who are attending in person. And it just kind of can work out that way. And I don't think the difference between Saturday and Sunday, getting to see everybody, actually could be a benefit for the first two rounds, because a lot of people who attend PGA Tour events take the whole week off and do it. But if you're not able to do that, wouldn't you rather see the whole field on Saturday and Sunday and the opportunity to see all the players that you want to see, all the star players that are going to be there, whether they make the cut or not, than Saturday and Sunday, where you might risk them not being there? Yes, the trophy is on the line, and that's certainly a draw. But if you want to go see a certain player that doesn't come to your town very often or ever, and you could have an opportunity, guaranteed opportunity to see them on the weekend, that just makes a ton of sense to me. I would go do that instead, knowing they'd be there, because they might not come back anytime soon, and you might not be able to do it the next time, or the tournament might be gone. There are a whole lot of reasons for that. So I would love to see some kind of Saturday to Tuesday events in particular, now that we've got the opportunity for tournaments to become rotating designated events and the opportunity to have players commit to tournaments they haven't played in the last 4 years, one new one every year. So you're going to have these chances, especially with the three events that the PIP players, the Player Impact Program players, they have to commit to three extra events beyond the 17 designated events, right? So you're going to get some of this type of stuff. Make it a little bit more convenient. Start it on a weekend. Have people be able to come out and see those star players for sure playing their tournament. That just makes sense to me. I will probably write something about it for Golf News Net, but I'm glad that Farmers is using their clout pretty intelligently here, kind of doing two things at once. It's a benefit for everybody involved. So hopefully you'll be able to watch the APGA on Sunday from Torrey on Golf Channel, and hopefully you won't forget that the Farmers Insurance Open ends on Saturday. That's going to do it for us. today on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Thank you so much for your time, for listening to the show. If you listen to it through a podcast service and you can rate us, we appreciate a 5-star review if you're willing to do that. Send your questions, comments to me on Twitter. I'm at Ryan Ballingy, or via email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. That's ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Looking forward to hearing from you. Always enjoy your emails and talking golf with you. And we will do this next Friday here on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Have a great week, everybody.